Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. There was an article in the Huffington Post titled, "Are We Mormons a Cult?" It was written by a Mormon woman by the name of Mettie Ivy Harrison. And according to her bio, she is the Mormon author of a book called The Bishop's Wife. She is a mother of five, and she holds a PhD from Princeton and is a nationally ranked triathlete. Well, when I saw the title of that, naturally I became interested because that is certainly a word that's thrown around a lot, and it's certainly a word that has been attached to the Mormon religion. But what impressed me about the article is I think that Ms. Harrison looks at that question with much more deeper thought than I think a lot of Mormons do. She gives a list of what she views to be or what has been touted to be signs of a cult. And then she goes through and she tries to explain why she feels the Mormon church should not be put into that category. But then she also, and this is what impressed me, she also puts in some of her ideas as to why some people might assume that they should be categorized that way. So we're going to be looking at this article. And I want to begin by giving a little bit of an introduction. In the first paragraph of her piece, she talks about when she was at graduate school in Princeton from 1990 to 1995, she worked summers as a temporary secretary at various big local businesses. She was talking to a coworker about her religion. Now, this coworker, a female, was a Baptist, and she had some pretty strong opinions about Mormon, she said. To be specific, she called Mormonism a cult. And when I tried to talk her out of it, she dug in and insisted. I asked her for the reason she thought Mormonism was a cult and tried to suggest that lots of religions she thought of as real religions rather than cults had similar traits. For instance, her argument that Mormons didn't believe in grace over works seemed similar to me to Catholicism. Well, let me just stop with that paragraph. And there are a lot of people that would agree with that statement that there is problems in Catholicism because of the emphasis on works, a doctrine known as infusion, which surprisingly is very similar to the Mormon doctrine of the atonement, and the view of grace in Mormonism being an enabling power that allows the member to keep all the necessary commandments if true salvation is to be achieved. And there is a lot of criticism on Catholicism regarding that aspect. I don't know if Ms. Harrison is familiar with those criticisms, but certainly they are out there. But then she goes on to give her response to this accusation that her coworker gave her.
She writes, "I was pretty prickly about Mormons being called a cult at the time, but 25 years later, I have begun to wonder if it might not be useful for Mormons to understand more clearly why so many people think of Mormonism as a cult."
Now, let me stop you there, because that is the very question we ask as a response question in our book, Answering Mormons' Questions. If you've ever looked at our book, the first chapter deals with this very issue, and some might say that we did that to be pejorative, and we didn't. The reason why that was the first chapter of our book is because that is a question that we get asked quite often. So chapter one in our book begins with, "Why don't you accept Mormons as Christians? Do you think we're a cult?"
And we give response questions after each of the chapters of this book. And in the response questions, the last one there, "Why do you think people assume that your religion is a cult?"
And I think that's a fair question to ask. And that's why I'm glad Ms. Harrison is bringing this up. Because when a Mormon objects to that title, I think it's fair for us to respond to it with another question. Why would people think that? And what impressed me with this article is she is going to address some of those points. Now, naturally, she does not think that her church should be categorized as a cult. But in light of some of the definitions that have been given over the years as to what a cult looks like, she concedes that sometimes her church does tend to look like one. She goes on to say, "Are these reasons that are true and are things we embrace? Are they true and things we might want to change? And are they simply not true and things we need to correct people about? Now, I think that's a fair question that she's raising there too. But then she gives 10 points as to what she feels are the signs of a cult. Now, I don't know where she got this list. It may not even be some things that she totally agrees with, but this is a list that she puts together. So what are the 10 things that she says?
Number one, a charismatic leader. Okay. And number two, denial of essential Christian teachings. And she gives some examples such as Trinity, Christ's reality, and the Second Coming. Number three, brainwashing and systematic programs of indoctrination. Four is psychological abuse, intimidation. Number five, mass suicide or doomsday expectations. Number six, authoritarian mind control. Number seven, communal and totalistic organization. Number eight, aggressive proselytizing. Number nine, social humiliation and punishment. And finally, number 10, limitation of information to membership or outright deception.
Now, some of those points, I can think of a number of reasons why the Mormon Church should be put in those categories. Maybe not all of them today, but certainly in the early years, some of them would be more attached to Mormonism than, let's say, modern Mormonism today. But we're going to talk about that. The first thing, talking about Joseph Smith, was indeed a charismatic leader, she writes.
The fact that Mormonism as a religion survived Smith's assassination in 1844 and has since continued to grow seems to indicate that it was not merely his personality that is Mormonism. However, when I was a child, we talked a lot more about Joseph Smith than we did about Jesus Christ. I think this is something that has changed dramatically in the church since then, and for good reason.
My question at this point would be, why do you think it's changed? I mean, for all these many years, clear on up to even her childhood, I mean, she can't be all that old, she recognized that more emphasis was put on Joseph Smith than on Jesus Christ. Now, what do you think has happened in the past several years that may have changed that? Could it possibly be Christians who are educated about Mormonism challenging their Mormon friends and neighbors on this very issue, and naturally those criticisms reaching the top echelon of the church, and they recognize they've got a problem? So in my opinion, I would say it was probably because of the education of Christians pressing this issue with the Mormons that they knew. And eventually, this getting the attention of the leadership, and they see they better start making some course corrections. Otherwise, they realize that the accusations being made against the church are in fact true. But notice, even she said that when she was a child, she recognized that the talk in the church was more placed on Joseph Smith than it was on Jesus Christ. So she's admitting this. And there have been studies to show that even in general conferences of many years ago, that Jesus wasn't really the focus of attention in a lot of the talks, was rarely ever mentioned except maybe in the name of the church. And of course, that has changed over the years, and I would say because of public criticism.
And I think also public relations, because missionaries are able to get into homes when they point to their badges that have the word Jesus Christ in there. But if you talk about Jesus, well, then I can accept that. And if they have more to offer, then you would consider that possibility. And in these last 20 or 30 years, we've seen a major pull over to that side, getting away from Smith and going closer to Jesus Christ.
Well, even in the fact that in the logo, remember several years ago when they hired that New York advertising firm,
right,
one of the suggestions was to make the Jesus Christ in their logo much larger than the rest. To me, if you have to do something like that in order to try and convince me that you believe in Jesus, let's not even talk about whether it's an orthodox belief in Jesus, but just the fact alone that you're going to have to raise the font. Something tells me something's wrong here. At least they recognize that something was wrong and it needed to be corrected.
She goes on to say, it might be useful for us to think about the way in which we talk about current leaders as well. Do we see them as men with flaws? Do we tend to elevate them to a status above mortal? Do we refuse to see Joseph Smith as a mortal with flaws? Would changing just a few words make it more clear that we worship Christ as the Son of God and not our own prophets?
Now, she raises, I think, some very good questions, because she even recognized that it might be useful. She says it might be useful for us to think about the way in which we talk about current leaders as well. Do we see them as men with flaws? Do we tend to elevate them to a status above mortal. And the next question, do we refuse to see Joseph Smith as a mortal with flaws? How many times have I had conversations, and I remember one in particular down on the streets of Manti talking to a couple ladies, and we were having a very good conversation about various issues, and one of the women said something that gave me an idea for a segue to talk about something about Joseph Smith. As soon as I mentioned Joseph Smith's name, I'll never forget, she kind of held her hand up and looked at me and said, not to say anything disparaging about Joseph Smith or this conversation was over. They were not willing to look at any type of criticism about Joseph Smith. Now, I backed off on that because I wanted to keep the conversation going. I had plenty to talk about. I didn't need to go in that direction. But it was shocking to me that she did not want to tolerate anything that could possibly show Joseph Smith in a bad light. So do we refuse to see Joseph Smith as a mortal with flaws? I would say that that woman that I was talking to, or maybe both of the women, only one of them objected, but I would say that they would certainly fall into that category.
As far as the question, do we see them as men with flaws, how do they project themselves at General Conference when they're addressing the membership? I mean, when they enter the room, everybody's in awe almost, and they don't seem to give a whole lot of honesty when it comes to struggles they may have with sins or the things that they're talking about in their messages. So they kind of give that persona. Wouldn't you agree, Bill?
I think you're absolutely right, and we've talked about this before, because one thing that you will often notice if you go to a Christian church is that pastors are very much like the people. They will get up, at least I know my pastor does. I know when I'm speaking behind a pulpit, I don't mind being self-deprecating. I don't mind explaining to people that I am a sinner just like they are. I struggle with things just like they do. And I'll even mention some of those things. I recall doing that just recently in a conference that I was speaking at, talking about one of the weaknesses in my own life and the problem that I struggle with as a Christian. You don't hear that in General Conference. You don't hear that in the fireside talks that we see printed. You don't see this in a lot of the printed material by these leaders. They do give the impression that they are above the rest when it comes to struggles that we have as flawed human beings. So I can see why a lot of Mormons probably would have that kind of a perception of their leaders. When I ask, do you know of, for instance, any Mormon who is doing what they are supposed to do as far as receiving exaltation? I've had Mormons tell me that they honestly feel that, for instance, the president of the church is obviously doing that. You would have to assume Thomas Monson is qualified for exaltation. So what would that mean? That means he's actually repented of all his sins, he's confessed and forsaken all of his sins, and that he's keeping all of the commandments. I don't think he is, but how many Mormons have to assume he must be doing that? Because if the prophet isn't qualified for exaltation, how can anybody else be qualified? Tomorrow we're going to continue looking at this article, Are We Mormons a Cult? By Mehdi Ivy Harrison.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org.